That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient. Comfortable. Ah.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
This week's episode of Movies That Changed My Life is brought to you by Disney's Raya and the Last Dragon. Watch in theaters or order on Disney Plus with premiere access on March 5th. Hey everyone, I'm Ian DeBorja, and welcome to IMDb's Movies That Changed My Life, a podcast where your favorite stars break down the films that made them who they are today. This week's guest is actor Kelly Marie Tran. You may know Kelly as Rose Tico from episodes 8 and 9 of Star Wars, but you will soon be able to hear her as the voice of Raya in Disney's Raya and the Last Dragon. Kelly and I talk about the importance of being the first Southeast Asian Disney princess, going to Harry Potter midnight book releases, and the movies that changed her life. If you listen to the show and want to give us some thoughts, please use the hashtag #MoviesThatChangedMyLife and tag at IMDb on Twitter, and we'll read out some comments and thoughts throughout the entire season, so make sure to get those in. Thanks so much for listening. Here's Movies That Changed My Life with Kelly Marie Tran. Let's get to the movies that changed Kelly Marie Tran's life. She's rubbing her hands together.
I am so excited.
Yes, this is going to be very, very fun. So we're going to talk about three awesome movies that I'm excited. I love all three of these. And we're going to go chronologically. Does that work for you in terms of release? Perfect.
Yeah.
So let's start with number one, which is very relevant to Raya and the Last Dragon. So this is 1998's Mulan, the original animated version. It has a 7.6 out of 10 with 258,000 ratings on IMDb, directed by Tony Bancroft and Barry Cook, starring Ming-Na Wen, Eddie Murphy, and B.D. Wong, and then sung by the great Lea Salonga and Donny Osmond. I mean, come on.
All hail. Lea Salonga.
I know. Like, Filipina queen, idol to the Philippine Islands.
Truly.
And if you haven't seen Mulan, the synopsis is, to save her father from death in the army, a young Mulan secretly goes in his place and becomes one of China's greatest heroines in the process. So talk to me, when was the first time you saw Mulan?
Oh my gosh. Probably right when it came out. I was not even 10 years old. I think I was like nine. This movie means so much to me. I think I've seen it, I'm not exaggerating, maybe over 100 times. Like, once we got the VHS, we just watched it over and over and over. It really was the first time I ever saw myself in anything. And yeah, I can, some of those lines, man, that movie is quotable.
Yeah.
It is so, so good and holds such a special place in my heart. It was so funny when they reached out and they were like, oh, you know, think about the movies that changed your life. I was like, you know, I could give like film school answers. And I was like, no. Let me just like actually talk about the movies that legit changed my life that I watched so many times. And I'm so excited to discuss these with you. But yeah, Mulan is definitely one of them for sure.
I mean, what was it like? Like, as a, you know, young kid, obviously up until that point, Disney hadn't had any Asian, you know, princesses or really lead characters up until that point. So, you know, what was that like going from, obviously, greats, you know, we have Ariel, Belle, and Cinderella, all these other classic Disney princesses. And then, you know, in comes, again, very similar to Raya, like Mulan, not only like a Disney princess with some incredible songs, which we'll talk about in just a bit, but like also like an action movie and all sort of stuff. So what was that like seeing that?
Incredible. I don't even know if I understood the significance of that shift when I was that young. Mm-hmm. All I knew is that I loved that movie. It was a big deal. I think that seeing someone who looked like me. It was a shift that I don't think I really fully understood at the time. I just knew that it was, I knew that I loved that movie and I loved that character and I felt happy watching it. And so I watched it over and over and over.
So something that has always stood out to me about Mulan is that, you know, she's one of the first Disney characters to not really just go after a Prince Charming. You know, her whole mission is to not only save her father, but save the country that she obviously loves to defeat the Huns, as they say. You said you've seen this, you know, over hundreds of times. Was there a moment when you were watching it, like, that sort of clicked for you? Do you remember when, like, that changed from being, like, a really cool, like, animated movie with good songs to where, like, oh, this is, like, sort of significant to you, like, in a grander way?
I think that seeing a character who was, because Mulan's also very funny and kind of, you know, in the beginning of the movie, she's sort of really having to address the expectations of her family and the expectations of her society as she goes through the entire matchmaker sequence, which incredible sequence. And then she meets Mushu, and Mushu is one of my favorite sidekick characters ever. I just think he's
so funny.
I always think about, like, how many of these lines must have been improvised, because when he's talking about, like, I'm travel size for your convenience and all these things, I'm like, I feel like all of that stuff was improvised. It must have been. There's so many non sequiturs. His lines are so funny. But yeah, I think the moment for me was seeing Mulan as a character who I'm seeing myself in, you know, this girl who has these expectations and who's sort of like trying to figure it out, is a little bit klutzy. You know, she's knocking over rice and she's like spilling tea and she's doing all this stuff. And then she becomes seeing her fight and like become this really capable warrior, and also seeing the trajectory of her being a really bad fighter in the beginning. I think it really taught me, I think it does something really well that also Moana does really well, which is that you see a character go from not being able to do something and then after really, really fighting and getting up again over and over and over, they're able to sort of change parts about them and also use the best parts about them to, like, for example, when she's going up the pole with the ribbon and no one else has thought about that. Like, that was something that came from her. That all was very inspiring to me. The idea that you could not only achieve and not only flourish in this field that you weren't necessarily familiar with, but that you could also use parts of yourself to make those places better in ways, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, totally. You've already talked about two of some of like the iconic scenes, where it's the matchmaker scene and the I'll make a man out of you scene. Do you have a favorite song or scene sequence from the movie?
I like so many of them, but I just think Girl Worth Fighting For is hilarious.
Yeah.
Girl worth fighting for. I can sing every word. Like, I want her paler than the moon, with eyes that shine like stars. My girl will marvel at my strength. Ignore my battle scars. I could literally keep going. It's embarrassing. But yeah, I love that song. It's hilarious.
Yeah, I think, obviously because, you know, little boy growing up, I think the I'll make a man out of you scene is just so cool. I mean, not only like...
So good.
Yeah, like the montage itself is awesome, but just like the music is like Donny Osmond singing that is so...
Donny Osmond's voice is like butter. I mean, yeah. And the fighting scenes, like the training scenes, once they all get good and they're all totally in sync, it's like...
Yeah.
It's like mind-blowing.
I know. I know. It's so fun. We talked about your favorite songs. Do you have any favorite other lines that you come back to in life, whether inspiration or just funny, something like Mushu, any lines that stick out to you whenever you think about it?
I like the entire King of the Rock scene.
Yeah. I'm the King of the Rock.
Yeah, King of the Rock. And there's nothing you fellas can do about it. And then it ends with him screaming and falling off the rock. Yeah, it's hilarious.
Any last things on Mulan before we move on to your next selections?
I love Ming-Na Wen. That's it. I think she's so cool. And I got to meet her once.
Ooh, please tell.
Yeah, I met her at the episode 9 premiere and she was so wonderful. And it was wild because at that time I already knew that I was going to be playing Raya, but it wasn't released to the public yet.
Okay.
So I met her and I was just like, it was like an emotional moment for me for sure, because I have looked up to her for so many years and yeah, it's just crazy.
now that it's out, have you felt the need to reach out or anything like that?
I want to. Is that weird? Should I?
Yeah,
how do people
absolutely
do
should.
That? Like, just I don't have Instagram anymore. So, like, how does one reach out to someone like that?
Okay, well, Ming-Na, when you listen to this episode,
yes,
reach out to Kelly Marie, and she will. We need to make this connection happen. So
this is truly like an actor's version of just Craigslist missed connections, just shouting out into the void. We met once.
Ming-Na, please reach out. We'll make sure we get that happen, okay?
Thank you.
All right, that was Mulan from 1998. Let's take a quick break to hear from our sponsor.
From Disney.
My name is Raya. Let's catch you up. Every day, the world's broken. I put my world pain on. And our people are divided. I'm a warrior. The world, I put my world pain. Is full of good people. Don't give up on them.
On March 5th.
It's up to us to restore peace. Note to self, don't die.
Raya and the Last Dragon. Rated PG. Parental guidance suggested. In theaters or order it on Disney Plus with Premier Access. Additional fee required. March 5th.
Let's go on to our second pick. So this is unique. This is the first time on Movies That Changed My Life. Rather than one film, Kelly, you selected eight. With
Okay. Let me preface this with, I almost sent Harry Potter and Lord of the Rings as two series that have legit changed my life. And I was like, oh, I just got to pick one.
So, okay. So you were going to do Lord of the Rings and Harry Potter, but you gave us mercy.
I was like, I cannot make Ian watch 11 movies. No, 13 with the other two.
I've seen all of them a ton of times. So
you're good. We're good.
It's good. Yeah, the Harry Potter franchise, it started in 2001 with Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone, ends in 2011 with Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 2. All incredible films, if you ask me, and I'm sure obviously if you ask Kelly.
Every single one is perfect.
Every single one. Written and directed by a whole bunch of people, but starring our core three is Daniel Radcliffe, Emma Watson, and Rupert Grint. I'm assuming you had read the books prior to the films coming out, or were you a film-first Harry Potter person?
No, I read the books, and I was like, such a Harry Potter fan. I would go to like Barnes & Noble, rest in peace. Wait, is Barnes & Noble still around?
It's still around. It's still there.
Borders is the one that's
Borders
like, okay, cool.
Is, yeah.
Yeah. I would go to the midnight openings for the books. Like, that's how deep this went for me.
Yes.
Do you remember that? Like, there would be like, parties at bookstores where you could like make wands and stuff, and you'd have to pre-order your book to make sure that you could pick it up when the time came.
Yes.
And like, you dress up in your robes and everything. And
I remember for like, I think when YouTube first started like getting like popular, like around like 2000, maybe 2005 or 6 or something like that, I remember seeing videos of people driving around to like Harry Potter premiere, like releases, and like spoiling the ending of books. And so for the last couple of, awful. So for the last couple of midnight releases, I actually wore like earplugs because I was like very scared that someone would like drive around and like spoil the books. So yes, I remember those and like having butterbeer in Barnes & Noble and like all that sort of stuff.
Oh my gosh. I loved Harry Potter so much, and it has absolutely sculpted my just my love of fantasy things, probably. Also Lord of the Rings, though. Both.
Yeah, love both. So for Harry Potter, so did you start reading like right away, or did you sort of hear about it at like the second or third book? I mean, what was your story?
So my fourth grade teacher, Mrs. Corum, actually read the first book to us in our fourth grade class.
Nice. That's cool.
Yeah. So I started pretty much right after that.
So the first film came out in 2001, Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone, which I love. It's so cute and cheesy and corny, especially compared to the later ones. But what was it like when you finally got to see Harry Potter like realized, on the screen?
So amazing. It was amazing. And I remember, so I would also go to the midnight showing of these movies, which, you know, being in middle school, just to be able to go to a midnight showing was like a big deal because it's late and your parents are letting you go see a midnight movie. But I remember just like going with my friends, we would all dress up. And then when the Warner Brothers like logo came up with like, depending on which movie, some of them would like have fog once to like the later ones or whatever.
Darker, and
I just, I just remember having so many emotions. Like, I am so excited to see these movies, like, every single time. And I went to the midnight premiere for every single one. Yeah, it was a big deal. And then to see these characters come to life, what's wild, too, is now that I, you know, have sort of gotten older and gotten to really get into the work of some of the incredible British actors that played a lot of the faculty mm-hmm. in these movies. It's incredible the cast they were able to put together for this.
Yeah, it's like the greatest hits of British actors. Like every single one of them, you know.
Yeah,
like it's like they didn't miss with any of them. It's incredible. Do you have a favorite? Is it fair for me to ask you a favorite movie, or if I can favorite two movies and why?
Out of the eight,
yeah.
I really can't choose, to be honest. I can't choose. Like, they're all good for their own reasons. And also, like, I think what's crazy to me is, like, I remember some of the things that I was emotionally going through when I read these books or when I watched these movies. And I think that's why I can't really choose, because it's so associated with my, like, growing up into adulthood.
Yeah. It's fun because we basically were the same age as Harry and the three of them, like, going through, like, the films. We were a little, I think we might have been a little younger in the book timeline, but in the movie timeline, we were basically, like, in step with all of them, maybe, like, a little older by the end. But I agree with you. It's so cool, like, how well the films capture the way, like, when we're going through, like, high school angst and all that sort of stuff. Maybe a little bit of college is when Half-Blood Prince comes out and Harry's all alone and, like, grumpy. Yeah, go on.
Yeah, I was going to say, remember when Goblet of Fire came out and everyone suddenly, like, Daniel Radcliffe and Rupert Grint had long hair, and because it was, like, so cool for everyone to have long hair at that time? Oh, my gosh. I remember just feeling so, like, all of my guy friends have long hair right now, and it was totally reflected in this movie.
I know. Along those same lines, like, as, like, they grow older, they, you know, in the early movies, they're just kind of always wearing their, like, wizard robes and wizard hats. But then, like, you know, Draco gets, like, he gets these cool, like, suits, right? Like, towards the end, like, as he ages up, right? And I remember being like, oh, yeah, I mean, it's cool seeing them, like, become more adults and that sort of stuff.
Yeah, and also Tom Felton in those later movies, incredible. Like, when he gets to... What was cool about reading those books is also, I wonder what it must have been like for them as actors, like, reading those books and knowing what their characters were going to do.
Mm-hmm.
That must have been a really interesting experience. Like, now having done Star Wars and having done Raya, like, I'm really glad that for me, Harry Potter was so separate from work. Like, it's like, I don't know how to explain it. It's like this thing that's untouchable in my mind. It's wild.
Was there a teacher you particularly like that resonated with you, whether like inspirationally from the series, where like you took their lessons going out like into the world that you think were like inspiring you?
I mean, obviously I was tricked into hating Snape for so long, but then by the end he was the one that stayed with me, and not just in the books but also Alan Rickman and his performance as he was so incredible. And there were so many moments in that movie where he delivers one line and it's like genius. Like when some character is asking him about the Defense Against the Dark Arts position that he didn't get again, and he says, obviously, and he's
obviously,
but he delivers it in such a way that it is completely unforgettable. And there's only a few actors that can do that. I watched, obviously, Rian Johnson's amazing Knives Out a couple years ago. And Michael Shannon did that for me. Mm. He had this one line, and it was the word no. And I cannot get out of my head how he delivered that line, because it was so funny and so grounded in reality. And some actors have that gift of being able to deliver those one-word lines in ways that just feel so real that it stays with you. And Alan Rickman was definitely one of those. Yeah.
It's in the one with Umbridge where he's asked, Order the Phoenix, where she's asking him like, oh, and you wanted to fill that position? It's obviously.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, she's, Umbridge.
Umbridge, I still think, was robbed of an Academy Award. Not only win, but nomination. She is so incredible.
She is so good. Yeah. So deliciously evil.
Yes, deliciously evil is a perfect way to say that. I have to ask the obligatory Harry Potter fan question. What house have you sorted yourself into, or do you think you would be sorted into?
Okay, I think I would be in one of those situations where the Sorting Hat would be like, and I would be like, Gryffindor, 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 and they would be like, but Ravenclaw, and I'd be like, Gryffindor, Gryffindor, Gryffindor. So then they would, I think the Sorting Hat would let me be in Gryffindor, but I do think that it's like on the border of those two. How about you?
For me, okay, so I have been a long fan of Slytherin, not because it's some like edgy choice to go with Slytherin. I think... I think
you shop at Hot Topic. I'm just kidding.
Yeah, my spike bracelet says otherwise. I just think ambition. A, Snape was from there, and Snape gave the ultimate sacrifice for Harry and like the school and the wizarding world by being the bad guy for however many years, you know, and then he is the ultimate sacrifice. But I like that ambition is their big thing. I don't think there's anything wrong with being ambitious. You know, you got to be ambitious. Some people take it too far, obviously, in the case of Slytherins. But as a whole, I think ambition is a key driver in my personal like life. So that's something I stick around with there. So that's me.
I love that.
Yeah, please don't slide into my DMs about that, anyone. So that was Harry Potter, 2001 to 2011. All amazing films, all amazing films.
This episode is brought to you by Philo. Do you love TV? Do you love saving money? Then Philo is your solution. Philo has shows, movies, and live TV for just $25 a month. You can even try it for free with their 7-day free trial. No contracts, no commitments, no hassles. Just a better way to watch TV. Never miss a minute of shows like the hit docuseries Where is Wendy Williams? Or classics such as Friends. If you can't get enough TV, then there's no better way to watch. Philo has more than 70 channels like BET, MTV, and AMC. And the best part? You can try it yourself with their 7-day free trial. Sign up today at philo.tv/poppods. That's philo.tv/poppods to get 50% off your first month.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
So let's jump to your last one. A slight pivot, but something I'm very, very also excited to talk about. This is 2006's Pan's Labyrinth. It has an 8.2 out of 10 with 621,000 ratings on IMDb, written and directed by the great Guillermo del Toro, starring Ivana Baquero, Ariadna Gil, Sergey Lopez, and Doug Jones. The synopsis is, in the Falangist Spain of 1944, a bookish young stepdaughter of a sadistic army officer escapes into an eerie but captivating fantasy world. So talk to me about Pan's Labyrinth. Really such an amazing movie in every which way. Talk to me about it. When was the first time you watched this?
I think it was, when it first came out. So 2006, I was in high school. And that movie is so haunting. It just stayed with me, and I watched it. I actually watched it pretty recently, like maybe a couple months ago. Like it's one of my favorite movies. I just felt like it was ingenious in the ways in which it explored war, but also in a way that took you into a child's perception of it. And I'm just obsessed with GDT. Obsessed. And I've gone down so many rabbit holes about like how he's gotten interested in monsters and how much of his upbringing played into that. I just think he's such a consummate like artist, and that movie and the music is so haunting. Like, I cannot get that song out of my head.
It's like an evil lullaby sort of like take, right?
Yeah.
Like
the way
it's like a haunting little melody there. Yeah, agreed.
Yeah, and I think it was my first real, I don't know if this is true, but I think it's one of my first real experiences with magical realism done very well. And that's my favorite genre of film, like without any doubt in my mind. I just think that... it's such an incredible movie. Yeah.
Something about the way Guillermo del Toro is able to write and capture like a child's like loneliness, right? Behind that in this film is so interesting because like he's able to balance the very intense, I mean, the whole thing is intense in its own
so
way,
intense.
Right? But like the intense, like, you know, how would a kid escape being in the situation, you know, that Ophelia was in? And he just does it so perfectly in a way that's like kind of hard to explain, but, you know, taking yourself into like imaginary lands, because who, when a kid is like stressed out or like wants to, you know, is kind of mad at their parents for whatever dumb reason or real reason they may be, like the immediate they want to do is like daydream. And like a lot of kids, you know, they daydream or they'll say like, I'm going to run away, right? They'll like, they'll picture like, I could just run away. And he kind of does that in this way, but with his GDT twist on it. Does that make sense what I'm trying to say there?
Yeah, it absolutely makes sense. And there's only one moment in the movie towards the end where the audience is suddenly given the question of, is any of this real or did she make it all up? And that's when her stepfather figure like finds her. And I remember that for me being like, oh, wait, I like that he doesn't really answer the question, that it's sort of a question. Yeah, that really, it's so beautiful. That movie's awesome. And I just remembered I have, like, looking at this, I'm going to actually go and get it. I'm listening to you, but I'm going to get my GDT book that I have, like,
yes,
on my shelf because I want to show you.
please go get it. Ooh,
so yeah,
look at that.
I have this book.
At Home with Monsters or something? And so I actually haven't heard of that. So what is it? It's just like all the work he does?
Yeah, it's like a... He's really into collecting.
Yes.
You know, like different monster type things for inspiration. And this is a lot of pictures of the things.
Yeah, like I've seen pictures like or videos of like his house. And it looks like just like an awesome museum of collectibles and stuff like that.
Yeah, do you remember when the fires were here a few years ago and it was in danger of being lost? I was like, no, GDT. I'm so invested. I've met him. Well, I didn't meet him. I saw him once. I'm like so invested. I was like, this cannot burn down. You don't understand. This is very important. but yeah, he is. I just think he's so incredible. And obviously, like Shape of Water is just.
Yeah, I loved Shape of Water because, like, in a way that Pan's Labyrinth sort of captured childhood, like whimsy in a really particular way, I feel like Shape of Water captured, like, when I watched it in theaters, I remember thinking, like, this is what a movie is. Like, when you want to escape and see like a fun movie, like this is it. It captures sort of like the whimsy and like the mysticism of old Hollywood in such a unique way without being like about old Hollywood. I don't know. There's something about it that's like,
magical.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I listened to so many interviews of him talking about how like every shot is moving because he wanted to emulate it being like water.
Yeah.
And just like all of these little choices that make it so incredible to watch. Like that's something that I find extremely interesting too. Like the more I learn about this industry and the more I work with people is just how meticulous people are in their decision making and how it does really make a difference. And he's one of those who I feel like is very, very meticulous about every single choice. But I agree with you that that movie has a similar ability to use magical realism in a way that takes you to a different place that I think is so rare in movies nowadays. Mm-hmm. It's not afraid to feel things. You know what I mean?
Totally. Feel things and sort of just like go where he wants to go, which is pretty hard to find. I feel like in a lot of new movies, right? I think a lot of new movies are trying to like, even at the time, I mean, even when Pan's Labyrinth came out, like, movies obviously try and please a wide audience for obvious reasons, right? But, you know, Pan's Labyrinth and Shape of Water and Guillermo del Toro in general, he makes movies for himself and what he thinks he enjoys. And it just happens that a lot of people really enjoy his movies, you know, and he doesn't cheapen it or anything like that. Yeah, there's just something about it, right?
So good. Yeah, they're so, so good. And God, I just love that movie.
Were you much of a dreamer yourself when you were younger?
I was, absolutely. Yeah, I have two sisters, one older and one younger, and I have these two cousins on my mom's side who we used to always go to their house in Riverside. Mm-hmm. And it's funny because the only two things I know about Riverside is one, their house is there, and two, that's where too, that's where the movie Changeling took place with all the murders and the chicken coop. So when I was growing up, we'd always go to their house, and my older cousin was the same age as my older sister, and my younger cousin was the same age as my little sister. So I was sort of the middle child that sort of got, I was very much in between. Like my older sister and cousin were really into like Backstreet Boys and talking about boys at the time. And then my little sister and my little cousin were really into playing video games. And I was sort of in this like awkward middle age. And because of that, I spent so much of my time whenever we were there, I'd be reading books and I'd be like daydreaming and walking around and like creating worlds in my head by myself. So yeah, I was absolutely a kid who sort of spent a lot of time in fictional worlds, I think, to escape reality.
Right. And now you get to play in these fictional worlds to help other kids. You know, I mean, look at what a beautiful, like full circle, not full circle, getting to the full circle, because obviously there's much more to your circle to come. But, you know, it's I love hearing, and, you know, the fun thing about doing this podcast is when I get to talk to people and you get to see these clear narratives in their life that like parallel the movies that they end up creating or acting in. It makes it so like wholesome and inspiring. And I hope, you know, our listeners get the same feelings from that.
Ian, why are you trying to make me cry all of the time?
You know, just a little AM cry session. Yeah. Is what, right before your very long hours of press day, I'm sure is exactly what you want.
No, that's really beautifully put. I've never really thought about it that way. And that, yeah. Thanks for saying that. I'm going to sit on that for a little bit because it's making me feel things.
So before we go, obviously, we have to talk about Raya and the Last Dragon. I had a chance to watch it last night. Being Filipino-American, I absolutely loved like all the visuals I got to see. It reminded me of so many things whenever I've gotten to travel back home to the Philippines. It was amazing. I mean, what are your thoughts? You get to be the first Southeast Asian Disney princess, Disney like warrior princess even. So what are your thoughts around that?
Oh my gosh. Well, first of all, I'm so glad that you resonated with it. And that makes me so happy to hear, because I think that we've been pretty meticulous about trying to capture authentically that part of the world. Mm-hmm. And it means a lot to me that you enjoyed it and that it resonated with you. And yeah, it's a big deal. I honestly, it sounds so crazy because, you know, I still don't really feel like I am, I've been working that long. You know, Last Jedi came out in 2017. It's now 2021. And before that, I was working in an office and just auditioning for stuff all the time. And it feels like a weird miracle. Like, it just feels like a dream, the whole thing. And I'm so excited for this movie to come out because I am so proud of it. But yeah, if you're asking me how I feel about about getting to voice Raya, it feels unreal. It's truly unreal.
But if people who aren't familiar with the film, what is it about, and who do you play?
Yeah, so the movie follows Raya, who, when we first meet her, is a young girl who's just obsessed with dragons and really has an ideal way of looking at the world. And her father is an Obama-esque character who is trying to bring the world together and unite the world. And then this sort of horrible thing happens, and she experiences something that sort of changes her entire worldview. And then we sort of see her a few years later, and she has become this person who is absolutely zero trust for the world. She feels like she has to sort of figure out everything herself, and she feels like the world is a broken place and you have to treat it as such. And yeah, I get to play Raya through all of those iterations, from when she's a younger girl to when she's sort of this this warrior. And I am really excited for people to meet her and to see this movie and to sort of follow her journey, because it's a journey and a lesson, I think, at the end of this movie that I'm still trying to take with me and to really learn and understand. Yeah.
Yeah. Obviously, without going into too many details, I mean, it seems like the message and final, like, you know, lessons about the movie are just like very relevant in a way to sort of how people are sort of approaching 2021 and how they kind of want to like maybe reflect on the last couple of years. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah. Oh my goodness. Absolutely. Yeah. I think that I absolutely relate it to the what's happening in the world currently. And I think a lot of the filmmakers have also said, like, it's so strange how, you know, movies like this take so many years
right.
to make. So there's no way that you could time it correctly to sort of be reacting to a current event. But it really does feel of this time in terms of the message. Yeah, that's absolutely something I think about all the time.
Something that struck me about Raya is that, and the film as a whole, is that this is like an action movie. It is an animated action movie. Like, there's a lot of really cool action sequences and a lot of fun adventure and stuff there. So was that sort of the, from when you first got the script, was that sort of the idea the whole way through, or did that sort of kind of change as you were working with it? Okay.
Yeah, it was very clear from the beginning that Disney was trying to do something different with this movie, not just in, well, yeah, first let me acknowledge the action scenes are amazing. And I think what's really cool is that Kui, one of our writers, is an expert in Southeast Asian martial arts. Mm-hmm. And so all the martial arts scenes, you know, the types of fighting, everything comes from this specific region of the world, which I just thought was amazing.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're right. It's definitely a different type of movie, I guess, especially when we talk about historically what we have come to expect from movies that are labeled as Disney princess movies. Mm-hmm. This is a very different movie and a very different character. And I'm really excited to be part of a movie that's sort of broadening the idea of what do we think when we think Disney princess. Mm-hmm. And I think that we are definitely sort of shifting the narrative in a really exciting way.
Yeah, I completely agree. How do you hope kids who watch Raya will be inspired in a similar way that you were inspired when you watched Mulan? Because I think the way that Mulan inspired you, it's Raya and the Last Dragon is 100% going to inspire little kids in like very, very similar ways. So I mean, what ideally, how are you hoping there are parallels there?
Wow. Well, I'm fully going to cry. So thank you. I hope that people just feel seen, and I hope that they take away something from this movie that stays with them. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that as an actor, the dream is to be part of something that people are moved by or something that makes people think. And I think, I don't know, you've seen the movie. I'd love to hear your opinion, but I think that this movie is so special and it has like a message that stayed with me at least.
Yeah. I mean, for me, it's like my wife, she's pregnant with our first daughter. And so for me, what I saw, I was like, this is awesome that I'm not going to have to go back to a movie from 1998 to like, which is obviously amazing. Like also one of my favorite Disney films is that, you know, we get to have like a really modern one come out with like, that isn't, you know, like you said, that kind of shapes the narrative differently on how people see Disney princesses. So we have these two like awesome movies featuring Asian like princesses that I think hopefully will be like very inspiring to her, you know, at a young age.
I love that.
Raya and the Last Dragon coming out theatrically, if you're able to, where it's safe, on March 5th, but also at the same time on Disney Plus. So that's exciting. Anything else about that other than make sure you go see it because it's awesome and everyone will love it?
Well, you said it so well. I'm really excited to share this movie with the world in whatever way is the safest. And I'm really, really excited. So yeah, you said it perfectly.
Final question here. We have Mulan, Harry Potter, and Pan's Labyrinth, and sort of leading off to where what I just said. Do you have like a through line between these three movies as to why you think you like chose these three? Do you see any correlation between when you watch them or anything like that? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think they all have magic in them. And that, gosh, for me, I think that's such a huge motivator in my life. Like, I just want to believe that magic is real. And I don't really know how to define that, but I want to believe that there's something bigger than me. I want to believe that there is things about the world that we don't necessarily understand, despite all of the technological and scientific advances. I want to believe that there are things that cannot be explained and that there's still wonder in the world and something to be excited about and surprised by. I think that's the type of stuff that I still gravitate towards, and this type of stuff that I want to exist in the world.
Beautifully said. Perfect. I think, like I said before, the magic between Raya and obviously Star Wars, I think you're helping kids and people also just, I mean, not even kids, just anyone, you know, continue to believe in like sort of magic stuff. So I love that.
Thank you.
Well, Kelly, thank you so much for hanging out with us today. I love talking about all three of these films, but Raya and the Last Dragon comes out theatrically and on Disney Plus on March 5th. Do you have anything else you want to chat really quickly about the film?
No, I it's an amazing movie, and I'm really excited for people to be able to watch it, and I hope people like it. Yeah.
So thank you so much for hanging out with us today. Have fun with the rest of your day, and I'm looking forward to Raya coming out for FNC.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for listening. To find out more about Kelly Marie Tran and the movies that changed her life, head over to imdb.com/podcasts.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader, like that car riding your tail. Or if you're tailgating right now, all those cars doubling as kitchens and living rooms are on AutoTrader too. Are you working out and listening to this ad at the same time? Well, multitasking pro, cars like the ones in the gym parking lot are for sale on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.